Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. This is your host, Glenn Greenwich, coming to you live and in color from New York City. I'm going to dial our fantastic Henrietta Bird in shortly so we can get her online and find out what she's up to in Chi-Town. And see what's happening. So today is the 11th of October. And we're making some things happen. Not sure why she's not answering her phone. All right, well, we'll continue. We'll continue the conversation. So one of the things that we do is we do the Declaration of the International Black Summit. So we'll do that in a second. And our website is www.blacksummit.org. And on that website, you'll find lots of great information about what we're up to and what we're doing. And, we don't have the information for next year yet, but we will be putting that up shortly. Declaration of the International Black Summit. We declare ourselves, our community, and all communities whole and complete. There's nothing to do except be. We assert that we are responsible for generating community of possibility and distinction. We listen for and grant being to the possibility and creation of unpredictable results. Our conversation of, about, and for those of African descent is one of power, self-generation, abundance, responsibility, unity, and integrity with the possibility of being. We stand for the expression of our spirituality, ending the murders of our men, women, and children, building economies responsible for funding our community, maintaining wellness of being in our bodies, providing human services, establishing nurturing relationships, altering the conversation of who we are in the media, empowering our youth. We declare that our community manifests itself in the world as a contribution in the transformation of the universe. Atlanta, Georgia, October 7, 1991. North, south, east, west, above, below, within. A moment of silence, please. All righty. So that's the conversation for tonight. To start us off, you know, what I didn't say, and I'm going to say it now, is the way to really kick off the conversation is to listen for yourself inside of the summit declaration. So it's an opportunity for you to really listen for what life is presenting to you. You know, sometimes we talk, it sounds funny how we're talking, but what the real deal is that we're listening for what life wants to contribute to us. Because life normally wants to contribute something to us. And it's a matter of determining, you know, what that is and what the possibility is. So anyway, kind of what we're up to, what we're doing, and it's a way of accessing um, our commitments and our vision specifically. And those are important aspects of empowering ourselves and empowering the people around us inside a community. So there, you know, so there's several conversations that are taking place that you know, make all those things happen. Let's see what else. You know, I'm going to talk a little bit about I would talk a little bit about the the elections, and not so much who I'm for, because this is, you know, I can tell you that for me, not necessarily for the International Black Summit, I would be speaking for myself, Glenn Greenwich, It's quite interesting what is taking place in terms of the discourse that's taking place, and I'm going to say the lack of class. You know, there's a lot of talking about and you know, name calling and what have you, and you know, it's unfortunate that has come down to that, but that's what it's come down to. So kind of is what it is, you know, it, like I said, it is what it is. So the thing for me is to make sure you go out and vote, make sure that you make a difference, and you you listen to what is being said and really take note. Yeah. So that's the thing for me is really taking note and you can see that interview where I talk about some of the things that are available and some of the things that we're looking to do as a community and as a business improvement district, because we're looking to we're really looking to be empowered and positive and create some future economic development conversations inside of the community here in Southeast Queens, as well as extending out and supporting other people in doing the same kinds of things. So, that's kind of what we're up to, what I'm up to, and I know that Henrietta is doing some really great work in Chicago as well, and I know Brother Rod is just came on the line, I'm gonna open up his mic, and he may want to share with you some of the things that he's working on from an economic development standpoint. So how you doing, my brother? Rod?
Yeah, Glenn?
Man, how you doing tonight?
Oh, doing pretty good. I kind of missed what you were saying, so what's the topic tonight right now?
Well, I was just talking a little bit. I talked a little, just a tad bit about the presidential race. I was just really talking about the kinds of things that we in the summit are up to, you know, the things that we're looking to do in the various communities. I know I was sharing a little bit about some of the development, community development stuff that I'm doing. I actually have in my Business Improvement District Facebook There's a video. I had an interview with Our World magazine out of the Kings of Queens, and so I talked a little bit about my vision and the future for Southeast Queens from an economic development standpoint. And so I talked a little bit about, you know, what I saw and what I was working on and what we can do as a community together. I know, for example, Henrietta is working on fundraisers and transformative, which is one of her programming things that she does. And so she actually works with the community and creates seminars that actually empower people, have people look at things differently, and inside of that, make themselves better, or, you know, have the opportunity to make choices that empower them and support what they're up to. And so I was also looking to see what kinds of things was happening in the Atlanta area around people doing transformational work. And I know that there's a lot of economic development going on in Atlanta with the light rail and some of the other pieces that are happening.
Yeah, I think the thing that's going on is are you there, Glenn? Can you hear me?
I am.
Okay. So I think the one of the biggest things that it's funny, I'm glad you said that. So tonight I went into the Auburn Edgewood area, Auburn Avenue, and I was looking to see if the train was coming through there, and it did come through. So one of the things that we were looking to have happen is to have the Beltline start to get initiated. And one of the things they did was put that rail line in, but it seems as if that rail line may have come in just a little bit too early because they haven't had the communities completely developed where they can have the walking communities. So at this point, it looks as if, at least from the outset, that they don't have the funding or the money to really keep that transit line going. And it may have been just a little bit too early. So I've been looking to see, you know, like I guess now, because I'm in the middle of my busy season, I may even start to go to a few community meetings and start to go back to the Beltline meetings to find out what are they going to do with that transit system, you know, how much further are we in the Beltline? Because it seems at one point just a year or two ago, or maybe I would say maybe 3 or 4 years, the Atlanta community said it was going to be 20 years before we got off the ground. They got the transit system, but then they don't have anything else in place. So now it's an opportunity for me to actually start to find out more about what really is going on by going to meetings, because at one point I went to several meetings. I went on Beltline tours. So now I just got to find out a little bit more about it. And right now I'm just not as privy to it. So it's just, I'm glad. And I've been thinking about it over the last, it's interesting, I actually been thinking about it the last few months because I'm working downtown more and more. So the more I'm downtown, then I'm actually running across the transit system, thinking about the Beltline. So it's just something for me to start to do my research and come back and say, okay, what can I do? What can I contribute? What parts of the Beltline do I want to actually start working in? Because as a other footnote, I was looking at, you know, buying some real estate, do some investments, and then when I looked at the investments, two or three communities that are going to be on the Beltline, they're buying them out because they know it's going to be in the future that the Beltline is coming through. The question is, what communities are starting to be impacted by it, and where can I actually put my growth, or what things can I actually add to that community? So that's just my piece about what we're doing or what Atlanta is doing around that. And I guess at this point, I'm just not up to speed in what we're doing right now.
Gotcha, gotcha. And so one of the things I see around that conversation is that, remember, cities are planning or looking to plan and do all that, like, 10, 15, 20 years out. So the infrastructure for the train itself, the light rail itself, might be the first phase. And then the second phase is to get the stops developed. So I guess from a planning standpoint, you want to look to see, do they have plans? Is the property in those particular locations, is it sold already? If it is sold, who's developing it? Is the owner developing it, or are they bringing in other developers to actually support the project? And for me, the interesting thing is always, how is it going to be financed? So that conversation is really becomes, is it a city-funded project? Most of the economic development projects that I've been around are funded both by private and public monies. So you may have the state kicking in or the city kicking in X amount of dollars and the rest being put in by private investors. That reduces the cost of it, but also provides opportunities for the developers to build a property with the city funding, and of course the people who benefit the most are the people in those particular communities. The interesting thing that always happens around that for me is that we have to own those properties, because if we don't own them, then other people are going to be determining, what's going to go there, who's going to go there, and the benefit. So it's an important conversation for us to be inside of and be part of in the early stages, in the planning stages, and not just after the fact, because usually after the fact it's already priced out. So the real money, the money is made when it's just in the planning stages. And that's usually when you can get property for very inexpensively, before everybody knows that it's going to be part of a plan.
Okay.
But I used to enjoy the motto, the logo that would say, "When's the best time to buy real estate?" The best time to buy real estate was 20 years ago. But when's the next best time? Now.
Yeah, that's good. That's actually very good. Okay.
Yeah. So Jerry's just going to allow me to put Jerry in. What's up, my brother?
Okay.
We got Rod.
I'm fine. How you doing?
From Atlanta. Good.
How you feeling,
my brother?
I'm good. I'm just fixing my dinner and listening.
Oh, cool. So what kind of economic development is happening there in Virginia? What kinds of things are they working on? Are they developing any communities of color?
Not for us, it ain't.
No?
No.
So where are they spending the money? In the suburbs?
Yeah, it's in the suburbs, and even like they fix them around here, they force them out.
Oh, okay, so they're displacing you guys. So they're So they're building it up and then forcing high prices to so people move out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not happening now, my brother, but it's going to happen. I see it.
You see it coming, right?
Oh, I see it coming, yes. The same thing they did in Brooklyn. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, living in New York City, you get to see that a lot. You know, you get to see how they come in, they bring in the money to the poorer areas, they build them up, and then the people in that used to live there can't afford to live there anymore, and so you get a whole new influx of people. The people who lived there for 20, 30 years, you know, got to move out. So that's part of the whole what they call gentrification.
Oh, brother, you remember? I'm gonna tell the other, but I want you to go back with me. Back in 2011. We was on our way to go to that meeting. And then remember we stopped at this certain place. And then we noticed that it was not a lot of us wasn't working at this store. And remember you were questioning. Yes. And it was a cry for Mexican, but it was not a lot. You questioned it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I told him, I said, what's going on? I said, let's see people like, and it was like one by one. And I remember I see that in Brooklyn too. And until people understand to see it, you will never understand how to compound it, you know? And that needs a lasting affection on me that day, because you know, I know it's happening, but to really see it, like, we don't care about your community. We're going to put these people here no matter you like it or not. And
you're right.
So by you got involved and everything, it was great. Because I was going to question it myself, like, you know, you coming out of military and everything. They don't have no conscience in our community. There's people who resident, like you said, there's 20, 30 years. There's, you know, possible, like, third, fourth generations. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he just said, no, we don't care that your existence there. And that's what the same thing they did, like in Brooklyn. As you already know, I'm like 3 minutes away from the arena.
Yeah.
We don't
care.
Prime
real estate now. He's talking about the new arena in Brooklyn, where the Brooklyn Nets play now, and the Islanders. Rod.
I was on mute. Sorry, I was on mute. What'd you say, Dan?
He was talking about the stadium that they built where the Brooklyn Nets now play and the Islanders play. So that stadium is how far was it from where you live? 3 minutes, you said?
About 4 minutes. Walk.
Yeah. Right downtown Brooklyn. So it was, you know, major. But the real estate in that area, and certainly, you know, 5-10 minutes away was not the best, but of course now all of that is scaled up now because you can get higher rents because you're close to the stadium. And so stadium is the big thing. You know, it's kind of like, you know, the Yankee Stadium in the Bronx.
Yeah.
You know, those properties are much higher than some other parts of the Bronx. So, you know, you basically what happens is that you get a supply and demand. So because the demand has increased and you're able to get charged more money, You know, then the rents go up, and you price people out because the people who are living there can no longer afford to the rents with the, you know, the new price of the rents. So,
yeah, and then the one thing a lot of people understand too, even like the downtown parts of different parts of the country, it doesn't reflect our community. So now the stores, they forcing us further out.
Uh-huh.
That impossible to travel, impossible to really have our money resurface in our communities.
Yeah.
So that's another thing,
you know,
we need to talk about.
The thing that we've got to remember is that can happen very easily when we don't own the property.
Yep.
You know, anybody can come in and dictate and do whatever they want, and we don't even get the benefit of it. You know,
no.
95% of the monies in our communities leaves. We spend in other communities. The 5% that we do spend is in our own community. Maybe only about 3% of it is actually Black owned, because we've got other ethnic groups that come into our community and sell. Now, these other ethnic groups cannot, we can't sell in their community, but we allow them to sell in our community. And I'll give you a case in point is the Chinese restaurants. In every Black community that I know of, there's at least one or two Chinese restaurants. And that's across the country. That ain't even just here in New York. That's anywhere I go, Chicago, Atlanta, you name it, Pennsylvania. So when you think about it, they've developed a marketing plan that they know works, that they can bring to the Black community, and they're going to sell, shrimp fried rice and chicken wings. And they know that that's going to sell. And you know, they'll have other stuff, but that's the main sellers, chicken wings and some fried rice.
And some French fries.
And some French fries.
Well, Atlanta is the opposite of that. Atlanta has it, when they build a stadium, nothing is ever built around it. And it's been true for the last two or three times. So it's interesting, the tale of two cities, you know? They're promising they're going to have. I said Atlanta is the total opposite of that. The community that the stadium is built in actually has no growth and development with housing at all. The housing over there is pretty sparse. Now, if some of that is on the Beltline, I guess that's why I got to do my research. I guess this conversation is actually having me starting to really research all the different things I can start to see what happens. But historically, when we build a stadium or a new stadium in the city, the two neighborhoods that we've actually done that in, which is in Summerhill and Vine City, no growth has come from those communities. They're old Black communities that were kind of run down. To bring it in, it doesn't spur growth. And that's been our complaint. That's what I'm saying, the tale of two cities. Now you get what I'm saying? The tale of two cities. In your city, it brings up the market value, but also you'd have less housing. What happened for us in Atlanta, most people have moved away from the city. And so you do have people who are in the city, but they don't live in those communities.
Yeah, but here's the thing that I see about that. So what the opportunity is, is to create some commercial zones around the stadiums so people could eat. So, you know, restaurants and bars so that they could actually go before the game or after the game, they could actually have a bite to eat.
We do have one community, which is called Castleberry. But then the biggest thing that they have is that you have tailgating, and tailgating has been the thing. So, you know, it's just hard to say how it's going to do, you know. So it's just going to be more like research, and what research can you find out that what really works? Because that's the thing. You can, you know, they got, because tailgating is the biggest issue here. You got, in this case, you have more people who come in just to tailgate. They don't go to restaurants. They just kind of tailgate. But it is a few restaurants that are around, but nothing new that will bring anything in, because you do have a lot of condos and things that's right in that area, but no serious housing, you know, that I can see. Just a few condos and a few apartment buildings right in that area.
Okay. We've got one listener on the line. Let me open up their mic. 314-381, go ahead. You're live on the air.
See, good evening. How you doing?
Good evening. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine.
That's good. We're just talking about...
You know,
we're
listening
to
economics.
Uh-huh.
You know, that... an organization, C-League, with the University, in fact, with the University of Georgia, that put out that information saying that blacks have $1.2 trillion worth of spending power, that's a myth. And I'm going to give you some reasons why.
Okay.
When blacks move into a community that was white, the whites move out.
Yep.
Those stores and shopping centers soon close. Whether it's the restaurants like your Outback, Joe's Crab Shop, Ponderosa, they soon close. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, for September of this year, last month, it was 18,174,000 black men and women 20 years and over that was employed. The men was 8,259,000. And if you look at the median income, which is about $38,000, that figures out to be $309.9 billion.
Okay.
Women of the same age, 9.362 million. Same. Women make less than men. Their median is 33,251. That's total $311.3 billion. Both told, that's $621.2 billion. That's a long way from $1.2 trillion.
True.
Yes. Then, I mean, when they say that, it make it sound like blacks are experiencing the things they experience because they're not spending their money right. But that's not true in many cases. Some cases, yes, but for the majority, no. Another point too to mention. 90% of African-American businesses, according to the U.S. Census, they gross less than $50,000. That, in fact,
say that again. What percentage?
90%.
90%
of black...
Wow.
According to the survey of black businesses, and the most recent was 2012. You can go find that on factfindercensus.gov. All the firms from 2012, there's 2.584 million of them. And of that, you have 90% that gross has an income less than $50,000. And, I mean, that's just it. 27% of them is less than $5,000. 47% is $10,000 to $999,000. Then you got another 82%. Well, let's see. Well, from $25,000 to $49,999, you have 90%. And that total, the 685, 529, 911, and 211,000. So that there is a now these ain't, we're not making fun, but when you go to the doctor and they give you numbers, blood pressure, sugar count, your weight, and you know, so on, those are numbers where you can look and see where problems exist and try to make some changes in order to make the overall much, much better. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah. So those are problems, and we got to change them. We have to change the way our education. I'm talking about elementary school. We have to change that. We have to make sure that the children that's in these schools are, when they come out of high school, that they're able to stand up to the rigors of college and not be put into some remedial. And also, I'm a strong proponent of directing kids into certain areas, because given the opportunity, they're going to choose something, you know, mediocre. It doesn't pay well.
Oh, okay.
And,
right.
And we need more engineers, because if we see that we got businesses that's not, you know, efficient as they should be. But even if they were, would they not want to have top employees, engineers, biochemists, and so on and so on and so on?
Yeah.
And if we don't provide an opportunity for our own children to work at 100%, others is going to provide an opportunity for them to work at 10% and 15% of the workforce. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to put that out there.
No, I agree with you 1,000%, because that's one of the conversations we're having here in Southeast Queens. Is we've got the high employment, we've got the youth employment that's even worse, and we've got to stop looking for somebody else to give us and create jobs for us. We've got to create jobs for ourselves, and the only way to do that is to nurture and support the entrepreneur compensation. But, you know, I'm a little troubled at the statistics that you told me a couple minutes ago, in that most of the black businesses are earning less than $50,000, which is a shame that that's certainly something to look at. In terms of,
it's actually got worse, because in 2007 it was 87%.
Okay. So yeah.
And if you want to really see some performance, look at them Asians. Actually, African Americans is beneath. Of course, we know we're beneath whites. Asians above whites, percentage wise. Then you got the Hispanics. Then African Americans come in last. We got to do better than this. I mean, this is unacceptable, because what we're accusing whites of doing, or what you're going to do, you're going to accuse Hispanics and Latinos of doing the same thing, because they're going to move ahead of you. And the 2020 census is going to provide categories for Nigerians to check off, Ghanaians to check off, Somalis, North Africans to check off. So that all-encompassing black or African-American population is not going to be those numbers anymore, because others is going to pull themselves out of that category and check off their own individual perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I'll let you guys get back to your program.
No. Well, this is part of the program. This is all. We're just having a just kind of like doing a little roundtable about economic development and what are the things that are happening in the various communities? And now you're from St. Louis, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So what kind of – we were in Ferguson on this last annual event. What's been happening – what do you see happening in St. Louis itself in terms of economic
development? Well, St. Louis is becoming more desolate. You know, Trump made mention about the ghetto, And somebody, some African Americans said that he make it seem like everybody live in the ghetto. But what he said was actually true, because people, the poor people in the inner city are being forced out, and they're moving into the ring suburbs, and their economic status haven't increased any. So the same economic conditions that they had in the inner cities, as they be pushed out and move out into the near suburbs, they're taking those very same conditions right with them. In some cases, they even may be a little bit worse, because some of the free services that you got in the inner city, you have to pay for those services in the suburbs: trash pickup, sewer, and water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's what they did in effectively in Chicago. They had the projects off of the Dan Ryan. You're familiar with Chicago, right?
Yeah, I remember them.
Yeah, so they had all of those string of projects, and they basically emptied them out and moved them to the south suburbs, knocked them down, and then rebuilt it. And now the place they're going, $1 million condos, because that's about 20 minutes from the center of downtown, and they're it's been a big shift in the economics. Of that particular the inner city, and of course, who's moving in there are all the people from the suburbs that no longer want to live in the suburbs, so they're coming back into the city, and this is convenient for them because some of them can walk to work or 10 or 15 minutes away from wherever they want to go to downtown, the inner loop area. So it's happening all over.
But you know what?
Places.
Blacks are moving down south, and between me and you, I am happy to see them do that. Now, some cities wasn't no good. You got those large populations in the state of Mississippi, Louisiana, Georgia, South Carolina. Those are economic markets that we should control. And I'm talking about the food stuff and everything.
Yeah.
We should control them. Mm-hmm. Blacks should control their own economic markets.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody does that. Asians, when they have their Asian restaurants, they avoid being EEOC because they bring their own relatives, and they can say that their relatives are more associated with the food and also the culture. And that way they avoid being sued for not having nobody else in the restaurants and stores but them.
Yeah, that's true. Because all the Chinese restaurants that I know of in Queens here don't employ anybody from the community, but they're bringing in from outside of the community to work with them.
Now you got these refugees coming in from Syria and elsewhere, and they're going to be placed in your Detroit, your North St. Louis. North St. Louis is desolate. You can see tracts of vacant land. Pretty soon you'll be able to look from one border clean down to the river, unobstructed view. And that's what they're doing. And another thing, when blacks move to the suburbs, they are moving behind whites into their homes where they have built up equity. And blacks are buying that equity. Those whites, mother and father, first of all, built the house for little or nothing. Then they sold it to some other whites. Then they sold it to some other whites. And they probably have about 2 to 3 times more cost value in that house than what the house cost when they built. Now, when blacks move in and buy a house behind them, if blacks wanted to go and try to sell that house, it's nowhere in the world that they could get double the equity out of that house. They can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. because I look at my parents' house, and we moved into a white neighborhood early on, back in the 50s, late 50s, early 60s, and you know, of course, the change took place, but you know, now it's black and Indian owned, but it's, you know, this is now maybe the second generation of folks that are in it, and the prices, the real estate prices, are, you know, off the chain. So it's you know, you're right. It, you know, the it doubles and triples, and I think well, I don't know what my parents paid for it, but I know that one of my neighbors was white neighbors was moving out, and he was offering $35,000 back in the 60s, and the houses in the neighborhood now are in the 400 range, you know, and these are, you know, relatively, you know, old houses. Some of them are, you know, side by side, you know, stuck together, and what have you. So, I mean, it, you know, there are a lot, you know, a lot of them are brick and whatnot, but they built, they probably built in the 30s or so, you know, 30s and the 40s. So, you know, it's interesting how that whole real estate market comes into play, and unless we know the history, we don't really, you know, we lose out, because we certainly, you know, you're right that we do need to control the markets, the whole supply chain, and in fact, I was talking to somebody about that the other day, and the whole segregate, you know, the desegregation has had us lose a bunch of equity, because that's when the black businesses really were thriving. Once desegregation came into play, you know, we decided that we would then start to buy from white businesses instead of black businesses, and really hadn't come back to the black businesses.
That's right. But I'm going to continue to listen. You guys go ahead and finish the conversation.
Sure. So, Rod, you still there? Mr. Rod. And we lost Jerry. I don't know what happened to Jerry. Rod, you still there? Rod, come back. You're still on mute if you're talking. Well, I'm not sure what happened to Rod. He probably was enjoying the conversation that we were having. But yeah, we were in Ferguson this summer, and it was quite an interesting place for us, given all of the turmoil that had taken place. But the most interesting thing about it was that it is a suburb, and that. That I was very surprised that it's a integrated community, and not just you know, a black community, which I was kind of surprised. I thought it was, you know, it is 60% black, but I just, like I said, I thought it was quite interesting to be in that environment and to see we were in this great community center. The center that they built was really a nice, awesome center. And of course, they had both blacks and whites working there and managing it. And you know, it was a very nice center. But we did see and hear some of the discrepancies around how people were being treated, and of course, you know, ultimately how they were being policed, you know, so that was quite interesting as well. Conversations that is important for us to think about and look at where we see ourselves and what's next. You know, what's next in if we're going to improve or expand the conversation of who we are, you know, as we state in our declaration. You know, funding our communities. You know, we want to look at you know, how do we generate economic engines and certainly get over this threshold of 50,000, because that's quite disheartening to say the least, that so many of the black businesses are not able to break that artificial ceiling. We actually have a program here in New York. What was it by? Oh, my goodness. It's called 10,000 Small Businesses, and it is sponsored by Goldman Sachs. And that's one of the things that they actually do is they show businesses how to get to the next level. The business has to be 2 years old. It has to have, I want to say it's three or four, a minimum of three or five employees. I can't remember exactly if it's three or it's five or exactly. And I think the minimum is, I don't think there's a minimum in terms of the revenue they generate, but a lot of the businesses are in the 80 to 100,000. And what they do is they look to take them to the next level. So they use mentorship. And they give them some tools to take their business to the next level so that they board of directors development, marketing, and access to finance, and some of the other restrictions that are hold the businesses down. It's a quite an interesting program that's able to do that, and I think that's something that we, given this conversation tonight, that's something that we will do a show on in the upcoming future. One of the guys I work with is Paisley Demby. You guys can look him up on the internet, but he's actually a program director for that 10,000 Small Businesses program. And the intention is for Sachs to really support them, to have 10,000 businesses be supported. And they have this fund that they put aside to make those things happen. So, quite an interesting program to be part of. And who? The none other than Henrietta Bird is now with us as we're about to close out. Young lady, how are you doing?
Good. Looking forward to the show next week. I said I'm good. Looking forward to the show next week.
Okay, cool. Well, we actually had an interesting conversation tonight around economic development, and we talked about Queens, Brooklyn, Atlanta, St. Louis, and Chicago. We even included your little town. So it was quite a interesting conversation inside of the world of economic development. And we had our brother man from St. Louis who joined us tonight as well. So it was a pleasure to have him. So it was a good show. So our time is up. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget to check us out at our website, www.blacksummit.org is the website. We still have the Ferguson information. Don't forget that we're going to Guyana, South America next year for our annual event. So please join us. Start putting your coins together. Make sure your passports are intact and that you have all that you need to make that happen. That's going to be an exciting trip outside of the country as we explore economic development and relationships with other folks and cultures inside of South America. So we're going back to South America. We're in Belize, 3 years ago. And so we're going back to Guyana next year, coming up. So check the website out for information around that, www.blacksummit.org. Anything you wanted to say to complete, my dear?
No, I'll wait, because I'll start a new conversation.
Oh, okay.
So
all right,
thank
cool.
you.
I got you. Got you. Ron, you want to close out anything? He was kind of on mute the last conversation.
Yeah, I just really appreciate the conversation about the myths about the money that the black community has. And I think that was very good to actually see the actual real numbers. So that actually kind of adds to that in that community that I was talking about, in that area, it's even the income is even probably about the same. And there's just no growth over there. So it's just good to actually, when you can actually talk to somebody or to see that you actually can have the real, like I say, you know, at least have an aspect of what the numbers really are and not the telltale signs of things that, you know, the misnomer or the misquoting of the numbers, what we actually spend in our community. So, it was very informational. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and all those numbers, Brother Man got from the census. So, you know, he's still on it. You can, is that accurate?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Well, thank you. What's your name again?
My name is Pianchi.
Bianchi?
Yeah,
well,
Bianchi.
Bianchi. Thank you for being with us. Appreciate it. It's always a pleasure. All, good night and God bless. And talk to you next week. Same bat channel, same bat station. Be well.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for a good show.